the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sending me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
I'm Courtney, and I am hosting today, and I am sitting here with...
Kanani.
And Hillary.
Yes! So, interesting story. It's really fortuitous that we're discussing psychic powers within witchcraft today, because I learned last week that my psychic ability is completely connected to Kanani's birth control.
You know, normal.
I mean, I could be normal. Predicting world events.
As long as there's no third child connected to my birth control,
I didn't see
I'm
that.
Down.
No.
I'm
I didn't.
Good.
Yeah. So anyway, I was in New York a couple weeks ago and was actually walking through Harlem, and it was a beautiful night. And all of a sudden, I'm having memories of this conversation that Kanani and I had like 2 years ago when I asked you what kind of birth control you were on. And you said, I am on whatever little white pill the doctor gives me that makes me have a period just once a year. And I said,
that's
okay.
My jam. Bring it.
And I don't know why. I just remember having, it was like not a life-changing conversation for me. It was just, that was what it was. And then we spoke a little while after that, and you'd had a really awful migraine that day.
Yeah, I have migraines, and I had, so first of all, this is super fabulous information about me, but I've never had regular periods, and I have been on birth control since I was a teenager, and so I've never had regular cycles, so I don't think about cycles the way other women do, where they're, you know, super intact and, you know, tuned okay. into it, they know it, they know when it's late, they know what's not. I'm like, maybe it's coming, maybe it's not, I don't know. And lately, I've been taking the pills straight through so that I don't have periods. And my doctor said that's fine. And I'm so busy. This is part of why I've realized I'm ridiculously busy. That it's taken me this long after like 18 months of having migraines to realize that I have one about every month. And it just so happened that this month, when I had my migraine, I also was randomly having a period. And then the little light bulb finally went on and went, ding, ding, ding. Maybe one has to do with the other. And so I was telling this to Courtney, and she says, I was thinking about you and I talking about your birth control today. And you should look into your birth control and see if something, you know, that has anything to do with it. And I'm just like, okay, crazy person. So then I go look online.
No, actually what she said was, you're right. I should. And it was like...
They know me enough at this point to know that I would never say that to you. I would never say that to
you. She's actually a lot nicer to me when we're not recording.
That's true.
She
that
is. True. She's actually a nice friend.
That is true. But I did look it up online, and it did say that one of the side effects of the birth control I'm on is potentially severe migraines. And I'm like, well, son of a crap.
And you're like, well, now I get it.
Now
damn
I get it.
It.
And now she's right. And I have to tell her she's right. And this is going to be awkward and uncomfortable. And, you know, so now
she didn't even
are.
Say it. She couldn't bring herself to say it. She just took a screenshot of the information and sent it to me. And I said,
that's true. I didn't even text
she didn't
and say
text
it
me.
Right. She's, I just took a picture of the computer.
She's like seething.
Fine.
Angry.
Fine. Here it is.
But at least it's not so bad. It's not like we found out that Dairy Queen causes your migraines.
I wouldn't care. I'm telling
oh,
you right
she
now.
She would suffer them.
I would.
No problem. She'd be like, well, I'm going to get a migraine. Worth it.
Well, a lot of the things that you love are actual migraine triggers for most people.
Caffeine.
Sugar, caffeine, wine, children.
Yeah, all those things. All of those things. And other than the children, I use those things to get over my migraines. Sugar, wine, caffeine. Those are my treatments. Those are my migraine treatments. I need more wine.
Oh, my God.
That's so funny.
So, meanwhile, yeah, well, I'm just actually, Kanani will not give me the dress she's wearing. And
no.
I feel like she owes me because I helped her figure out this puzzling. Because it was funny because a couple months ago, I looked at her and I said, you know what your style is? And she says, I have no clue. And I said, your style is soccer mom Morticia Adams.
Yes.
And she has totally leaned into that since then. And she is wearing the most soccer mom Morticia Adams dress in the history of the world. It's black. It's lacy, and it kind of has a, like a mini train coming out behind it. So all she's missing is like a ratty black parasol, which she can hold
it's
over her
happen.
While she's on the soccer field this afternoon.
Please do it.
And I've already been to one soccer game today. We're recording
and your nails
podcasts.
Are fabulous.
Thank you. We're recording the podcast in between two soccer games.
I know,
so
and that's why our
this
our
dress
guest
is
today,
being worn.
Our guest today actually games. Has to call in from the car because he's on vacation, calling us because he's a good person.
He's awesome,
and it's because we have to go around Kanani.
We owe him.
My soccer mom,
Morticia.
Schedule.
Morticia Adams, so soccer mom.
I do want a parasol now. Ever since you've mentioned that, I'm like, that's happening.
Well, Hillary's also got on a very gothic sundress and is looking pretty fabulous. And I'm in my t-shirt and blue jeans with my pig ears on. I'm feeling pretty good about that. Well, my exciting news of the week is that my new book is now available for pre-sale on Amazon.
Yes! Yes.
So, The Morrigan, Celtic Goddess of Magic and Might, is, as of this morning, was the number one new release in the Celtic religion section on Amazon. Now, that is very exciting, but what you don't realize is that that is updated hourly, so I am probably back down to number 65 at this point because somebody else with a new book probably tweeted it out and all their friends went and bought copies. So that's how it goes. So I had bragging rights for at least 3 hours this morning.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it is exciting. People seem like they're...
Oh, look, you have another sale.
Did you really? You're not supposed to buy my stuff.
I'm buying your stuff.
I don't buy her stuff.
You should buy...
I'm like, give me a book and
you don't. You don't read my stuff. Okay, Kanani didn't even read the book I dedicated to her.
That's
true.
I can't even.
Friends should support other friends by purchasing their products.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, anyway, but also saying, you know, friends, if you don't pre-order, it is really fine because I really encourage people to buy from local independent stores. Anyway, Hillary spends half her money at QMeb, so I'm not worried about like...
Yeah, QMeb, she's doing her
supporting
part to
the, supporting
keep
the
alive.
Yes, you're already supporting the
store. I spent so much money at QMeb. I spent so much money pretty much at every witch shop.
I know,
like,
so
ever.
I'm not worried about you.
She's
like, fine, you can
part.
Pre-order yours. You're already helping. Yeah. So, but I do, I mean, it doesn't really make a big difference to the author financially at the end of the day, whether you're, unless you're an independent author. But for me, going through a company like Red Wheel Wiser, it doesn't really make a big difference to me at the end of the day. Somebody asked me about this. And, but what it does make a difference to me personally is that our small independent stores are supported because
yeah,
that's the centers
sure.
of community. So, you know, great. If you don't have a bookstore near you and you want to pre-order, I will not complain. Thank you so much. But
no, but do you go to local stores?
But
for
if you
sure.
can,
if
you
can
go to a local
absolutely.
Store, yeah, and I'm,
that's a choice.
And, so,
I mean, I will for sure. I like, I'll buy multiple copies.
Of course you will.
Because I'll gift
gotta,
it to people.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good. I mean, it is nice to pre-order stuff because it also helps people get visibility when it's online. But it's equal availability. And I try when something is physically available in shop to always go to a local store. I just think it's, you know, the larger online store retail places are not struggling, but
exactly.
small stores are, especially for books. So
right. Although they're saying that local bookstores are actually seeing a big resurgence.
Really?
Yeah. Because,
that's awesome.
Because people are seeking them out.
Yeah.
Because they also have events there and
yeah.
you know, you can't get the smell of a bookstore online.
No, I love bookstores.
Ugh,
I
smell
love
of a bookstore.
Bookstores.
It's just so, but I'm excited because I know you will read my book, Hillary.
I will read it.
Kanani won't, but that's
I'll
okay.
take a picture with it though. That's what
and
I do.
She does. She
I
takes,
do. I promote the crap.
She does promote me.
I just bought the Bridget book from you. Like 4 weeks ago.
That's
where was
fine.
It? It was at, I still need to read it.
Yeah, Pagan Fair. I don't care.
It was
I mean,
a Pagan Fair. No, but you should read the damn book.
Okay, but the worst thing people can do to an author, and I'm saying this out there, and now everybody's going to do it to me, it's going to really piss me off, is when people come up to you and they go, yeah, I read your book. And you're like, oh yeah. And they go, yeah. And that's it. And you're like,
okay. Cool.
And you're not going to ever say, did you like it?
Yeah,
because
that's
I'm
not
somebody on the spot. But I'm like, obviously, authors always deal with crippling insecurities because we spend way too much time alone.
Yeah.
And so...
well, and it's like such a weird thing to say. Like, I actually have had that with performance. Oh, yeah, I've seen you sing before. And you're like, oh, cool. And then there's like
silence
and you're like, cool. Well, I have other shows that are happening if you're interested.
And they're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, and they just don't say
and you're
a word.
Just like, oh my God, did you hate it? Did you not
yeah.
like it?
And so, it's just this, that is the worst thing you can do to an
yeah,
author.
I'd rather have
it
someone
is worse,
straight up say that they didn't like it.
It is worse than tearing me down on Goodreads
yes,
and
because
Amazon.
At least you know.
At least I know, but, and also I can respond.
Yeah, you can be like, actually, you're wrong.
I had somebody like scold me for one of my books a while ago, and she was so mean that and it was horrible because I was supposed to be giving a book, like a talk on that book later that day. And she just scalded me. She's like, this is the worst book I've ever read of the and I'm a pagan, and I couldn't stand the fact that it got all these good reviews, so I have to come tell you the truth about it. And just ripped it up.
Wow.
And I was so horrified. But then I noticed that they also tore up my colleague who writes about the same stuff. And so I'm like, something's going on here. So I wrote her a response and I said, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I, you know, explained to her, hey, some of the problems you have with the book, I agree. Those were mistakes. I should have done it differently. But, you know, that was a choice I made. Yeah. Just the way it goes. I disagree with you here on these points. But then I threw in a zinger because I'm a Southern woman and we do things this way. I said, well, I'm sure we'll cross paths. I'm often invited to come speak at these things at different parts of the country about my book. So if you're there, let's have a glass of wine and you can tell me all about it.
That's amazing.
She took the review down.
I bet.
She went to my colleague's page and she took that one down too.
Sometimes it's like, I think sometimes people forget.
Yeah.
They like in the moment, they're like, and online there's too, it's not behind to a person.
Yes.
I think that it's very easy to be frustrated and in the moment vent to a computer.
Yes.
In a way that you would never do. I mean, we see this in online culture in general, the way you would never do
to someone's
face. You would never come to someone's face and be like, this is the biggest piece of crap I've ever read in my life. I can't believe
it. If you're sober, you probably wouldn't.
Maybe if you're drunk. But the thing is I think that it's good when we can engage people and say, hey, you know, I appreciate feedback, good and bad. This is why I made these choices. Like oftentimes, even if they still think it's terrible, it makes them check themselves. Like, oh, wow, I really went. That was a person, a human being read that.
Because I think
people forget that a human being is going to someone that has spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of their life on something is going to read that. You know?
And so it's, and it's okay. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't criticize an
author. No, you should criticize an author.
But it's also...
You can do it in a respectful way.
Now that I am an author, when I do have a challenge with a book, I am trying to be as constructive as I can.
Because that's valuable.
And just say, hey, look, this is where I feel like the author is making a mistake. But, you know, I just try to say things that are more, that they can do something with. Instead of being like, this is a worthless piece of steaming...
I do that with singers all the time. Even if I see a singer that I'm like, oof, there's some problems, I still try and say like, hey, this one, I try and point out something that I like off the bat. Hey, I really liked this. Here is some feedback that I think would be helpful.
Yeah. So speaking of authors, we are about to bring on our guest today.
Yay!
So and it's Matt Arin, who is a witch, professional psychic, and occult teacher throughout New England. He has been drawn to the occult and metaphysical since an early age, reading books on witchcraft at 8 years old. He is an initiate of Black Rose Witchcraft, the Cabot Kent Hermetic Temple, and the Temple of Witchcraft. So things all of y'all newbies can go look up after this. He is currently a high priest in the Sacred Fires tradition of witchcraft. Matt has had the honor and privilege of studying under Christopher Penzack, Lori Cabot, Devin Hunter, Storm Fairy Wolf, Chaz Bogan, Jason Miller, and other prominent witchcraft teachers and elders. He runs the blog For Puck's Sake on Patheos Pagan and writes the column Extrasensory Witchcraft in Witches and Pagans magazine. He has been featured in various magazines, radio shows, podcasts, books, and other periodicals such as Witch Way, Disinfo, and The Wild Hunt. So, Matt, I think you're probably the busiest
I know, I was going to be like, so you haven't really done that much then, right?
weren't you recently listed as a paganism influencer on social media? Ooh. Is that what we heard?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the first things we ask our guests is how you knew that you were a witch. So, Matt, how did you know that you were a witch?
That's kind of a difficult question to answer, because I did get involved, you know, with books like Silver Ravenwolf and Scott Cunningham at a really young age, but I didn't really identify with the word witch until maybe 6 years ago, after meeting Christopher Penzack and, you know, his whole reclaiming and embracing the word witch. And I think that's because I grew up in a very kind of new age community, where everyone was a Reiki master and a shaman and, you know, like a level 14 quantum touch healer. And so, you know, the title thing was kind of weird for me to embrace. I kind of wanted to feel like before I called myself a witch, I wanted to really feel like I earned it somehow. And I think my views on that have kind of changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's actually fairly recently that I started identifying with that word.
So interesting.
Yeah, I feel like we come to this kind of conclusion with a lot of people. Like everyone kind of came to calling themselves that in different spaces. It's, I mean, in different time periods or in different spots in their life. But we hear that a lot where people are like, oh, I kind of did these things but didn't really refer to myself as a witch.
And there's such a stigma around the word, yeah, word witch is something that we talked about,
yeah,
a couple of episodes ago, and that people are still, they're like, I'm a healer, or I'm a this, or when I was at Pagan Fair, this woman ran up to me and she said, how do I, contact the goddess Bridget without the trappings? And I'm like, what trappings do you mean? She goes, the witchcraft. And I was like, first of all, and then second of all.
Yeah.
Like, just, yeah.
That was a Heaven and Pagan Fair? That's,
yeah, it did. This one lady, and she really kind of pissed me off, but.
Well, that's, just, I mean, but I think that's true. I think people that are unfamiliar, that haven't really interacted in communities of witches, I think they hear this word, and it's a stigma that often happens, and I think that, you know, people are afraid to say that because they're afraid that if they say that, it means there's something that society views as something that it's not.
Right.
You know?
And I think that's what, one of the things that we're talking about today is about having psychic powers in witchcraft and what that means. And yeah, sometimes it's like psychic powers come out randomly or in different things. I've had people kind of challenge me on, you know, psychic ability and the thought that, you know, if you're psychic, you need to be psychic all the time and you have to be right all the time. And that's just not how it's going to work.
And sounds exhausting.
It is. Like, it's so hard to be right all the time. You know, and so then you get people who they're saying they have prophecy or they have the gift, but they don't want to use the word witch. And especially in certain areas of this country that, you know, people are we'll talk about having the psychic abilities, but they will not use that word. You know, I mean, Matt, what
yeah,
changed?
Say, like, yeah, intuition,
what changed for you? Because you you write about in your new book, Psychic Witch, about having, mm-hmm, you know, having psychic ability, and that's something that you've had your whole life. But what changed for you from being just, you know, being a psychic, being a sensitive, to being a witch? And you also mentioned in the book the differences between being a psychic and being a witch, and the two are not always wedded, although they often are.
Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of think that they should be wedded, though. And I think historically they were a lot more wedded than they are today. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning of the book, I talk about how I see psychic ability and witchcraft kind of like Giannis, like it's kind of two faces of the same thing. Because for me, you know, I try not to define witchcraft, too narrowly for myself in the book, but I see witchcraft as, you know, the manipulation of energy, being able to kind of move those threads and those energies, and I see psychic ability as the perception of it. So if we were to do it super, super basic, it would be sort of like hearing and speaking. Like, you need both to communicate.
Hmm. Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, and I think you can have just, you know, like there's many, you know, powerful witches I've met who aren't psychics. And there's many psychics I've met who just can't manifest anything. And I think if you're able to do one, it's easy to unlock the other.
Mm-hmm. That's a really
I think
point.
That's probably true.
I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so do you believe, Matt, that everyone is psychic or everyone, I mean, it seems like through your book that there's a sense that anyone can develop psychic ability.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that I write about in the book is, you know, we usually refer to psychic ability as extrasensory perception, right?
Right.
So that term has the connotation that it's something beyond our normal senses, like our senses extended, right? And that's usually how people define it and how people teach it. But I kind of think it's backwards. So I think our psychic perceptions are our primary senses. And I think those are the senses of spirit. Those are what we have before we incarnate and after we incarnate. And I think that our normal senses, like sight and touch and hearing and tasting, are those senses extended for this reality, this third dimensional reality.
That's something somebody was asking me, like, why is it that we have spirits that come and warn us? Why is it that we have prophetic dreams and that sort of thing? And I feel like that this is really very natural. And I don't even think that it's like supernatural. I think it is ultra natural to us. I remember reading a story in Psychology Today that was trying to disprove psychic phenomena. And by trying to disprove psychic phenomena, that for me anyway, they ultimately confirmed it.
Proved it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a really horrible, it was a horrible story. So, but what happened was these children were all having the same dream of what they said was a black substance that was covering them and filling their noses and mouths and they couldn't breathe. And so they took this to the psychologist and say, why are all of our kids having the same dream? And this, I forget what the psychologist said that they thought it was, but they said, but then a couple of weeks later, there was a mudslide that took out the school and a lot of children died.
Oh my God.
So to me, it's like these kids were having this very primal warning about danger. And I, as I said, people are, we're just not really well equipped for this planet because we don't have fur. We don't have scales. We don't have claws. We don't run very fast. We don't see very well. We don't hear very well. We don't smell very well. And we don't have fangs. So, you know, one thing that has kept us alive besides our thumbs was, you know, having somewhat of a superior intelligence with the exception of, like, whales, you know, that that we were able to create things. But also I think it's having that sense and... I tell people the story that what actually sent me to witchcraft formally, you know, I dabbled around a lot, but what really sent me was a psychic phenomenon that I had in 2001 where I was 9/11. Yes, it was 9/11. I was dreaming that there was a city of people that were dying, walking, and they were walking around bleeding and naked and dying and didn't know it. And looking back later, I realized the people in those dreams were people I knew who were New Yorkers. None of those people actually died in 9/11, but that was the symbol that there is something coming. And I remember running around trying to warn people and nobody would listen, like total Cassandra moment. And then finally, the last part of the dream, someone walked up to me and said, if you wear this, you'll be safe. And it was a burqa. And I didn't know what a burqa was then. I mean, I probably had seen it in National Geographic or something, you know, but I didn't associate it with any group of people or any really with any region. And so the burqa was the only thing that could keep me safe. And so I realized, oh my God, something came to warn me that there was something coming. And as I've gotten older, I felt like, you know, that was like, my human tribe was in danger, or the same way, like if we've been living in the cave and I'd had a dream about saber-toothed tigers coming or raids from another tribe and said, we need to defend ourselves and make sure that we, you know, block the cave door tonight because there's something out there that would have, you know, that was like a way of protecting myself. But here's what's frustrating. And somebody asked me this a while ago because I told them about this dream. And then I also said that I had somebody on Yelp review me badly for my tarot reading because I had not accurately predicted her boyfriend dumping her. And so this person said, well, how are we supposed to believe you're a psychic if you can predict 9/11, but you can't predict that this woman's boyfriend's going to dump her? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, Matt. What do you think? Tell us. Tell us.
You just hit on a bunch of areas that I geek out on. and it was too much for the book, so it's not in the book. But one is actually the reverse, because a lot of people will be like, well, how come, you know, psychics can't predict things like 9/11? Like, no one predicted 9/11. Like, a lot of famous psychics, you know, like TV psychics, some of them, like, kind of retroactively claimed that they predicted it. So that's one of the questions. And then the other one is that part, like, how come things can't just be seen, right? So I have a couple different thoughts on that. One is sort of the example of you. A lot of people did sense 9/11. A lot of people did sense something was happening, had a lot of symbols, things like that. And it's not anything brand new either. If you read a lot of the older occultists, you know, around World War I, and then even before that, World War II, even Carl Jung, like it's clear that they're totally picking up on this world war that's about to happen, but they don't have any frame to interpret it. And this is when I teach psychic ability, I try to be very clear with both my clients during a reading and my students that what you're receiving versus your interpretation are two different things. So I could be seeing the image of a star, and the image, the information is correct, but how I personally relate to that, you know, is it literal? Is it symbolic? Is it a name? Is it the name that's important? That's the hardest part with that, right? The other idea is I think we aren't supposed to know everything. I think it kind of defeats the purpose of life, right? So if you knew about this breakup... What?
I'm so nosy. I want to know everything. I want to know everything. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue. You believe it? So continue.
We would have no purpose to incarnate because we'd have nothing to learn, nothing to experience if we knew everything that was going to happen. So even like the most mundane things, like, you know, is her boyfriend going to break up with her? You know, maybe she's not supposed to know that. Maybe certain people aren't supposed to know 9/11. And although that's, you know, a really horrific event, the other line of thinking that I've come across is I don't think that there's one specific timeline. Like, so when I'm doing a reading, whether it's tarot or anything else, I feel like I'm tuning into the most possible path. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think things are set in stone. I think reality is kind of more of a multiple timeline type thing based on our choices and our decisions.
Exactly. Yeah.
So saying that, I still believe that there are certain, for lack of a better word, because I don't know what kind of term to give it. I don't know if there is one. I think there's sort of nexus points or like space holders of events that are supposed to happen. How those are fulfilled can change. I feel like 9/11 was one of those. It doesn't mean that it should have or had to have happened the way that it did, but something would have taken its place either way. And I think that's kind of those things that, you know, as a species, as people who are incarnated now, you know, we have to deal with that. I mean, look at how much has changed because of that, how many challenges, how many things that we thought were like, you know, fixed and resolved, you know, have come back to our face. I mean, Donald Trump alone, right? So Donald Trump, I believe, is part of that 9/11 effect, right?
Yeah,
and
it's true.
Despite how much I do not like the man, he's brought up a lot of shit that needs to be healed, that we, at least me in my naivety, I thought we were healed and, you know, moving on from.
Right.
Yeah, certainly. Oh, it certainly shined a flashlight on... It certainly exacerbated and shined a really large light on things that I think we were able to kind of be ignorant about.
Yeah. We're past that. People aren't that racist anymore. Things are better.
Democracy is always going to be there.
It's always going to be fine. I think
the lesson lately is how fragile democracy really is.
Right. Yeah. It is. It's like, I think he's horrible.
but we don't always discuss politics in this episode, but it's kind of hard not to in these times. Yeah.
And I think that it's kind of a scary place for people right now, but I also think that it has really like highlighted things that we were unwilling to see or that were not as visibly obvious or it was easier to ignore. So I think we're definitely more aware of some of the problems that exist.
Well, I think people over time especially just become very complacent.
Yeah.
And this has made it quite clear
that
democracy is not for spectators. Yeah, democracy requires people to be involved.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time people just got very comfortable and very complacent.
And I think I don't think there's any coincidence that the really huge spike in interest in witchcraft has happened in the last 2 years.
Absolutely.
Now, it was growing before.
It was growing before.
But now it's just exploded. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
And I'm sure, Matt, you've seen that because of the work that you do.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, with the Trump thing, you know, it's our collective shadow. I mean, that is textbook shadow, the stuff we don't want to deal with. You know, the stuff that we don't want to look at, we think it's fine, we've pushed it back, but then it comes back to bite us in the ass because we did that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so to me, it sounds like
you sense that psychic phenomena is partly natural, but also part of like the evolution of humanity's soul. Is that what I'm hearing?
So I believe it's natural. I think it's been kind of dumbed down in us. So in the book, I talk about how in evolution, in any animal, us included, evolution favors the things that help us to survive. It's called awareness fitness. So the things that we don't use, the things that we don't feel we need for survival slowly get lost. And I think that, you know, although evolution is a really long time frame, I think that we see short-term effects of that. So I think a lot of it is just suppression. I think it's our society. I think it's our views on things like imagination and psychic ability and magic. I think all of those kind of materialistic, atheistic type views kill it. It hinders it. I mean, you see in children, I talk about this in the book a little bit too, children are more predisposed to be in the alpha state. And it starts changing when they start understanding things such as rules and things such as, you know, what's expected of them.
So, yeah, when you're talking about the alpha state, you mean that's the state of the brain waves where it's a little calmer, it's almost like dream state?
Yeah, so it's like imagination. Mm-hmm. And you see this in children. You know, they're highly imaginative. So alpha is associated with psychic ability, but it's also imagination and daydreaming. And that's one of the things that a lot of people, when they approach psychic ability and, like, journeying and stuff like that, they're like, oh, it might, like, what if it's just my imagination? And the answer is, if it's just your imagination, you're on the right track. It doesn't mean it's accurate, but it means you're tapping into that brainwave level. Because the imagination is, it tends to be, while we're awake, the easiest way for us to receive that sort of information. So it's easier than, say, like, theta brainwave state, where you're totally, like, tranced out and you've lost awareness of reality. Or when you're sleeping, sleep obviously is the easiest way to get psychic information and tends to be the thing that I think people kind of dismiss the most.
Yeah, it's just and I think that with practice, people can start to tell the difference between when their dreams are psychic and when their dreams are just, you know, you're sorting your subconscious. Because to me, I feel like the colors and the physical feeling in my body are different when I've had a psychic dream than when I've had just even a nightmare about things that are going on. But a lot of people, as we talked about earlier, come to witchcraft or come to witches because of psychic phenomena that scares them. And I know there was a woman at Pagan Fair who came up to me who's devout Catholic, but she was having all these psychic experiences and she didn't know what to do with them. And so she's like, I'm going to go to the witches fair and talk to them because the priest isn't helping me.
Yeah, the priest doesn't know what to do.
I'm sure you've come across this, Matt, with people who are like, I'm having psychic experience. I don't know what to do. What do you tell? You have a lot of great exercises for them in your book, but, you know, beyond just beyond that, what do you normally tell people when they're trying to understand what's happening to them?
Well, it depends. I mean, I would have to hear their specific case, and I would have to see, I would have to kind of make a judgment call of whether I think that they're being sincere and whether I think that it's not something that is beyond my scope of medical expertise.
Right.
But a lot of it is just, you know, once people have those experiences, like, they kind of believe it. Because, you know, if you have a dream, you know, not to go on that plane and then that plane crashes, you know, that's a pretty big red flag there, that, you know, this probably means more than just, you know, a scary dream. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking, because one thing I tell people is say, write down your dreams, write them down, and you will find a pattern. Mm-hmm. Or if you're starting to recognize you're getting a physical sensation, or you have, I mean, it used to be also before I'd have a psychic phenomenon, I'd end up getting injured. Like something would hit me or I'd fall down some stairs and eventually I was telling this to someone and I said, every time I'm about to have a premonition, I end up with a big bruise. And she said, well, you know, you can tell the spirits to give it to you in a different way. She's like, you don't have to put up with that. Like, you know, sliding downstairs every time that you need to have, or, you know, having, you know, have an upset stomach and, you know, I'm in the bathroom for 20 minutes and then start to have a vision that way. She's like, just tell them no more of that.
We've talked about that before. We just did. Having boundaries with spirits, you know, like, and saying, you know, saying like, don't come and talk to me. Like, I think I said, I hate it when spirits come, like, stand right behind me. It freaks me out. And right. It freaks me out when anyone stands right behind me. And so it's like, you can say, it's perfectly acceptable to say, you know what, this isn't working for me. If you want to talk to me, if you want to communicate with me, it needs to be like this, in this space with my boundaries. And
absolutely.
And I think it's important to do that. Because no one wants to have terrifying nightmares.
In my experience, a lot of times when spirits do that is because they just don't know. Like,
right.
When they do the overwhelming things, they think you're just not getting the message. So they're just increasing it and increasing it, you know.
They're escalating, and you're like, stop it!
Yeah, so, like, you know, with spirits, I have very, very firm boundaries, especially when it comes to mediumship and stuff, because a lot of times, one of the first things they'll show me is how they died or how they passed, and a lot of times, I'll start feeling it in my body, and There's a certain point where it's like, okay, like, I don't need to feel this anymore. Like, I got the idea.
Got the message, yeah.
I can use an image or something.
Yeah. So another thing you talk about in the book, which I thought was really helpful, is things that people can do to basically ground themselves when they have too much psychic phenomenon going on, or they're overwhelmed by the psychic energy, or this is happening too frequently. So say, Matt, you're at a festival and you've got either a newbie witch or someone who's not a witch but is having a lot of psychic phenomena. They're saying, I just don't know how to make it stop. And based on talking with them, you don't think that they need to go to see a psychiatrist, because there is that too. Sometimes somebody's having a mental breakdown and actually needs
That's
medical attention.
That's what I was
attention.
Dancing around.
Yeah. So I was like, let's say this person is not suffering from a mental breakdown, does not need medical attention, that it's something that is spiritual and is, or psychic in nature. What are some of the things that you might suggest somebody do, or how might you talk them through that situation?
Yeah. So just like we were just talking about, you know, boundaries with spirits, you can have boundaries with yourself. So one of the exercises that I think I put in my book is the idea of the dimmer. Is that what you're getting at?
I think so. I don't remember reading the dimmer part, but I remember you were talking about like different methods of grounding and sending the energy back into the earth.
Okay, so yeah, that's the basic. So just like a basic grounding. Later in the book, I think I have another exercise too, beyond just, you know, that kind of grounding and releasing that energy, is the idea of setting a dimmer energetically in your field. So I use two different metaphors because people work differently. One is a volume knob and the other is like a faucet. So the idea is, you know, if things are overwhelming, you can turn it to the left and turn down your input, or turn it to the right and increase that. But the most basic, so if it was a beginner, I would go with the grounding, because grounding comes from the literal electrical term. So a lot of that has been kind of confused and lost over the years, particularly with New Age influence, where grounding feels like it's more about like connecting with the earth. And on one level it is, but the term literally comes from an electrical ground, which is used for excess energy to go into the earth so that the device, whatever it is, doesn't explode and blow a fuse. And the same thing is with us as well. I have exercises too for shutting down psychic ability, and I am very big about shutting down after any psychic experience. So there are ways that, you know, you can make it clear symbolically and make it sort of embedded in your subconscious that you're not going to be perceiving. So one of the things that I do, because I read in Salem in October, which is a madhouse.
Like reading tarot, you mean?
Like psychic readings.
Yeah, okay, so psychic readings.
Because
in Salem, Massachusetts, October, in October, which you yeah. said in your book was a combination of Halloween and Mardi Gras, which Kanani and I have been. Yeah. No, yes. we weren't there. No, I went to Halloween.
We weren't there for Halloween.
Okay, I went there with Isabel. There. Okay, yeah. but I have been to Salem at Halloween. So anyway, go continue, Matt. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, totally. So the best anyone ever put it was, I remember one lady, she finally, like, she was waiting, and she finally sat down with me, and she's like, wow, this is like a psychic sweatshop. And I just started laughing. A psychic sweatshop?
Oh, my God.
Because it really felt like that at the moment, because it's just back-to-back for, like, sometimes it's 11 hours straight.
Wow.
And as private contractors, you know, like,
crazy.
We don't always, you know, we have the option of not taking a break or, you know, a lunch.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do, because I would realize, like, after reading so many people, especially, you know, so close to Samhain when the veil is so thin, I would start reading everyone around me, even when I was, like, not working and it was overwhelming. So one of the things I did was I started creating a mental trigger to turn myself off. And so I did this with a special ring that I have. So when the ring is on and it's hematite, then I'm not reading anyone. That is my symbol to my subconscious. We are not reading. Mm. When I take it off, we're reading.
Okay.
So it's something that simple. But, you know, if you do the Pavlov's dog effect of, like, just telling yourself, you know, this thing means this, this thing means this, your subconscious will work a way to energetically make that true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think what one thing, especially new people, and I even struggle with this sometimes too, is to say that you're just because you're imagining it does not mean that, or like using an imaginative technique does not mean that psychic ability is all imagined, that they are connected. And they kind of, I think where your really work is really helpful is saying they enter the brain through the same place, even though they're not, it's not this, because I know that my dream about 9/11 was not an imagination. It was too specific and it was too close to the time. That was a psychic phenomenon. At the same time, it's as though the phenomenon could only use the symbols that were in my mind. So it's showing me New Yorkers that I knew as a way of saying this is where it's going to happen. Kanani, you have been unusually quiet. What, do you want to add anything or ask Matt anything?
No, I'm just kind of listening. She's absorbing. Yeah, I'm just kind of listening. I mean, one of the things that I think is interesting as far as my experiences is I don't... Sometimes I get dreams. It doesn't usually come to me in dreams, honestly. Usually it comes to me just in the moment, or it just kind of happens. And a lot of times I have absolutely no idea where it came from. And so, like, for example, a friend of mine and I were walking down the street, and he says, "Oh my God, again." And I was like, "What?" And he said, I have seen my ex-wife three times today, or I keep thinking I see my ex-wife. And I said, "That's weird." And I go, "Well, how many times does that happen?" And he's like, "Three times today I've saw someone and thought, oh my God, it's my ex-wife, and it's not." And I just looked at him and I said, "Well, you're gonna see her in 3 days." And he just kind of looked at me like, okay. Then three days later, we're at a grocery store and we're walking down the aisle and she walks by. And it's like, I don't know why I said that. I have no idea where it came from. It just pops out of my mouth. Yeah. And kind of that's how it happens for me, is just some sort of, it just flies out of my mouth and and it's true. It happens.
So that brings me to an interesting question, which I'm not sure if I have a definite answer for. So I am assuming you are a witch.
She's a giant ass witch.
Did you predict it, or did you speak it into being?
Oh, interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
My guess is she predicted it because he saw, but unless you were mad at him and you wanted him to see his ex, then I think
I definitely wasn't, and I certainly didn't want to be there when he did. So yeah, certainly didn't try and manifest it.
Oh my God!
One of the most prophetic things that I've ever had though was I was in high school, and this is how it literally works. It just comes out of nothingness and just out of my mouth, and I was talking to a teacher. And I just looked at her and I said, and I didn't have a boyfriend at the time. It was like the only 6 months of high school. I didn't have a boyfriend. And I just looked at the teacher and I said, "I'm going to marry someone that I know And then if you were to tell me that I was going to marry this person, I would laugh in your face.
You also think you said he's someone from your past.
No, I said someone that I know.
Somebody, oh, okay.
Someone that I know. And I said, and if you were to tell me I'm going to marry this person, I would laugh in your face. And she just looked at me funny, like, what a random weird thing to say. And I didn't know what it meant, and I didn't understand it any better than she did. And my first time I was married, and was married very young, I married the boyfriend of a girl I hated. And I met him years after high school. I hated this girl. And I just knew him as the stupid idiot that would date this horrible woman. And I ended up marrying that man. And oh, if you God. Had told me when I was in high school that you're going to marry the serious boyfriend
of the nasty bitch,
of the nasty idiot, girl yeah. that you hate in high school, I would have laughed in your face and said you're a moron.
Well, and
but a little, I've had moments like that throughout my life where just something
and here's pops something in. Something for me. My psychic ability, I mean, I had psychic dreams and visitations from spirits when I was a little girl, but when my, like, prophetic psychic ability really kicked off is when I became sexually active.
Interesting.
It was. I mean, and I remember the first time, the first guy I fooled around with was a boyfriend I had in high school. We, according to Dan Savage, it didn't qualify as a sex, whatever we did. I'm not going to say his name out of his privacy. We had a really bad breakup, and then, actually, I was with you, Kanani, and we were going to Safeway, and I stopped and turned and looked at you and said, Sam's been here. And this grocery store was nowhere near Sam's house. And Kanani's like, okay. I said, I just know it. I know that he's been here recently. We walked inside. His brother was a bag boy.
Whoa.
And so he had clearly dropped him off at work that day because I knew that that's what they had. And I didn't know that his brother worked there.
Wait, is that the name you didn't want to say?
Yes. No. Sam was...
Not the name.
You know him.
Sam okay.
Not
the name. I thought you were like, Sam's been here. I was like, shit, is that the person?
No. No, you know who it is. You know who it was.
Okay.
Was.
Yeah.
Sorry to say that. But I want to, you know, keep privacy because I'm actually kind of nice to my exes anymore. I used to not be. Yeah. But, oh my God. You know, we're getting close to doing our final segment, but before we do, you know.
Well, I'd be curious to hear some of his psychic experiences, some of the reasons that he really started looking into this.
Yeah.
Like, what experiences have you had that really brought you into, wanting, I need to help people do this.
Wanting to refine that skill, yeah.
That's a tough question, too.
You're with the tough witches today.
I've always had experiences. I got my first tarot deck in high school, and I think that's what made me start looking at it more seriously, because I would do tarot readings, really bad ones, for the kids at lunch, you know, where I would be like, okay, now let's
Hi,
look
are we
this,
all the same
this
people?
Card up in the little white book.
That happened, yeah, and, this is sounding awfully familiar.
And I did a reading, and during the reading, I was like, are you pregnant? Like, and there was nothing in the cards that would have told me that at all.
Right, it didn't
but
come
it was
in the
just
cards.
Like, yeah, like something opened yep. from working with it, you yep. know? She confided in me, like, oh my God, I am. I don't know what to do. Which is, like, one of my funny jokes. Like, I know I'm getting old because when people are like, oh, you know, I'm pregnant, you know, I can't be like, oh my God, what are you going to do anymore? You know, it's because, like, they might... Want it.
I know. Now it's like, are you excited?
You're like, you watch their faces. It's like when Kanani called and told me she was pregnant, she was in tears, and I went, yay?
Yeah.
Right?
You're yay? Crying, so I'm not sure if you're happy.
Is this good cry? Sad cry?
I know, so it's like, yay, question mark?
So I had a lot of really weird experiences, and I kind of fell in a weird way into being a psychic reader. At the time, I was working very heavily with the Morrigan. The Morrigan kept coming to me, which is a subject very close to Courtney right now.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And in general. And I had a really shitty job that I hated because when I moved to the East Coast, you know, a lot of it is like who you know. So like my resume didn't mean anything. And I was working at this place. And they laid everyone off temporarily for renovations. So during this time, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, and I had been reading for people a little bit. And Christopher was like, oh, well, you know, like, I'll talk to Chris at Enchanted and see if he can start reading there. So I agreed to it. And right as it was the day before I was about to go in and start reading regularly, and I get a message from my boss saying, like, oh, everyone can come back on that day, the same day. So I had to make a choice. It was a very crossroads type moment because I had felt that, you know, this goddess who I call the Morrigan, she never called herself the Morrigan, but the symbolism, I feel, is all there, was pushing me towards. And so I was like, okay, well, I do feel that there's something here. So I'm sorry, I already found another job, you know, which was hard because it was a big blow for pay, which I'm sure anyone who reads knows it's not the most lucrative career to have.
Or you can't count on it.
Yeah, and then, like, a week later, I messaged an old coworker to be like, oh, you know, how are things now that the place has opened up? You know, I was trying to get some gossip. And she's like, oh, actually, it never happened. They just decided to close the business instead.
Whoa.
So if I would have turned down the tarot gig, like, I would have lost both of them.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Gosh. One of the things that you kind of touched on a little bit, which I thought was interesting, was, and I've heard the term, I think I heard the term, it was called, like, tarot amnesia or something like that. But one of the things with me with reading tarot, and probably the one person I've read tarot for most of anyone is Courtney. And Courtney loves it when I read her tarot, because she's like, you're always, like, spot on, and it's rarely things that she wants me to tell her. But,
well, sometimes they're good stuff.
But when I do it after I've given someone a reading, I can't tell them what I told them. Like, sometimes they want to discuss it afterwards.
And you're like, I don't know.
And I really have no you know, I don't really recall whatever it was that I've told them. And I'll do the tarot spread, and I understand how to read tarot and all that stuff. But for me, you use the term, you know, kind of opening up. For me, it's like, that's what it does, is I, like, do this spread, and I kind of glance at it, and I kind of look at it, but then it just comes out of my mouth. And it doesn't necessarily, like, correlate with what is happening with cards. I'm not looking at cards. I'm not looking too much at the placement of the cards. It just flows out, and then I really don't have much memory of... what I said.
Yeah.
So do you meet many people like that, or?
Yeah. And I think it's, so two things you touched upon. One, I think that amnesia is a safety mechanism with us. I think it keeps us from that overload, which is why I try to, adopt the technique that I learned from Christopher and then learned from Lori, which is the whole clearance and balance. Like, you just consciously clear it out of your field so that you're not taking on energy, because when you are reading someone, you are absorbing a little bit of their energy, and when you're that open, it can affect you. So
oh,
I think
intense.
Like when it's readers intense. Have that psychic amnesia thing, I think it's like a safety measure.
Yeah.
The other thing, what was the other point? What was your
question? Oh, about how you just kind of, you don't necessarily read the cards, it just kind of comes in.
Oh, yeah. So, the best example, and I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, is Lori Cabot. So, Lori Cabot is an extraordinary psychic. Like, she's helped find dead bodies and capture people and, you know, all this police work. And She can read tarot, obviously. She knows tarot. But for the most part, it's a prop for the client.
Yes.
I've seen her do readings. Like, none of that shit is in the cards. You know, she'll like, pull a card and be like, oh, so there's a leak in your basement that was recently repaired, but it's going to leak again. And they're like, oh, my God, how did you know that? And she's like, oh, you know, six of wands. You know?
Yeah.
Like, has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I think that is a good sign, because I find, too, that people get hung up on the tools, sort of like a crutch, at times, where they're too dependent on, say, like tarot as the example, where they can't do a reading or they can't they don't give themselves permission to read without the cards, or if it's not in the cards, they're not going to say it. And I think that's kind of a crutch, and I think it kind of holds people back.
I agree.
And yeah, and it's not to say that the cards are wrong. You know, the cards, I'm sure, have accurate information too. But, you know,
for some people, it's a tool to open
it. It's always the shit you don't want to say that is the most important thing that they needed to hear, or the big piece of validation for them. And I usually take that as a sign in my own readings, and I try to teach that, you know, if something keeps crossing your mind and you're like, oh, I don't want to say that, or like, you know, there's a big chance I'm going to be wrong, just say it.
That's the one thing you probably need to say.
Yeah, so going back to the idea of imagination, my book is so big on imagination because that is a big component of it. I think my first exercise is actually role-playing. And the purpose of that is to not take it too seriously,
right,
and give yourself permission to just read someone.
Everybody needs to go get this book.
Do you have a new boyfriend now?
I do have a new boyfriend. Right, oh my goodness, yay!
I'm sorry to tell you this, Matt, but Kanani has now put you in her boyfriend collection.
Yeah, she's got, it's a big club.
You are in fabulous company. And yeah. I always explain to people, I'm a totally harmless stalker because I'm easily distracted. And I have a very short attention span. So I'm like your perfect stalker. I'll be your biggest fan.
Well, I'm easy to stalk. I put myself all out.
Hillary just gave her the screaming goat.
The goat.
So normally at the end of our episodes, we do an exercise, which is as above, so below. Or as below, so
above.
But because Morticia Adams' soccer mom here needs to go to her kid's soccer game, let's wrap up by Matt. Tell us what events do you have coming up?
So this year is actually pretty clear because I am finishing up other projects that I'm writing and working on that are still top secret. But I will be teaching at Temple Fest this year.
Yes,
which
August.
Talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I will be reading at Enchanted in October in Salem.
Okay. People can find
you
there.
And that's pretty much it.
All right. And then they certainly can follow you on Patheos and Facebook and you know, it's your prolific writer online. But
yeah.
So
everywhere. Like I said, I'm easy to stalk.
You are easy to stalk. You're probably the easiest pagan to stalk on the internet. Congratulations. Yeah.
Right.
So
it'll bite me in the ass.
Yeah. So all right, well, thank you so much for coming on today. This was wonderful. And also, I should mention, he's calling in from his romantic vacation in Maine with his boyfriend.
Thank you for making time.
So he so much he loves witchcraft and our listeners that he would actually like ignore his hot boyfriend for an hour to talk to us.
We really appreciate you. Go have an excellent romantic vacation.
I had fun. I'm very honored to be on here, and I enjoy talking to Courtney the few times we have, and yay, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys as well.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I feel like you gave like so many good pointers and suggestions.
Yeah, really good info.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I hope so. I've been traveling all day, so my brain is like foggy.
Totally great.
But all right, everybody. Well, thank you so much. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions for us to answer.